Do you crave deep and meaningful conversations? The kind of conversations that jazz you up, stretch your mind, and leave you wanting more? Welcome to Suzanne Says, Courageous Conversations about Life and Living. I'm your host, Suzanne Bird Harris, and I talk with friends and colleagues about what lights them up, their fears and flaws, who they've been, who they are, and who they're becoming. You know, the stuff that makes and breaks us. So get comfy. Here we go. Sandra, thank you so much for joining me today. I am really excited to have this conversation with you. And I think I want to just dive right in and ask you, without mentioning what you do for other people, who are you?
Who am I? Primarily a mom first. I have a 17-year-old son, and I'm a creative person. I really like science and art, creativity, and I like bringing the two together to see things differently.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. So how does that show up in what you do for other people these days? Are you doing what you want to be doing?
Absolutely. So what I do is I help building owners and design teams create energy efficient, healthy, and resilient buildings. And it's the combination of that beauty of architecture, but the science of passive design, passive solar, and all the performance of all the different building materials. So it's like that cross-pollination is what I really like.
So tell me, what is passive? What did you say? Passive design? What's that in a nutshell?
Well, it gets really cold here in Toronto, Canada. So building technology has changed such that the windows used to lose a lot of heat to the outside during the winter. And now they're so high performance that they're net gainers. So the net heaters for the building.
Oh, wow.
When the sunshine comes in, it heats up the building and warms it up during the winter. And if you design the window openings the right size in the right orientation, then they'll keep your house pretty warm, even in the depth of a Canadian winter.
So how's that work in reverse in the summertime? What do you guys get up to temp-wise up there? I mean, you're not cool in the summer by any stretch.
Yeah, we have hot, humid summers and heat waves that are becoming more frequent. Mm-hmm. So our climate right now we have like 2 or 3 weeks during the summer that is hot and humid. And by 2030, 2040s, we're going to have 30 or 40 days of the summer that are going to be hot and humid. It's super important during the summer that you have large overhangs that are sized properly that can shade your home. So you don't want that direct sunlight coming in during the summer. And then making sure that the windows and doors and openings line up so that you can bring the prevailing winds through the house in a way where it enters low and exits high and gets the breezes going right through. And then you can assist that with night ventilation cooling. So as long as the temperatures drop at night, like even Lahore, Pakistan, the temperatures drop at night there, and they can do like a night flush of the building and get the temperature down during the evening, and then you're all set for the next day, right?
So you start out cool as well the next day because of the overnight having come in and kind of cleaned everything out, right?
Yeah.
So is this a way to not have to have AC?
Yeah, there's a risk of overheating. So what we don't want is for the building to overheat, because that's not fun for anybody. But for a house, you can usually put in what's called a heat pump. You might know it as a mini split, and it just looks like a box on the inside of your home. And then there's this condenser fan coil on the outside that runs, and it can run both ways. It can heat your building up during the winter, and then it can cool your building just like a fridge. Imagine your home is the fridge instead of instead of the fridge in the house. Right. It just acts like a refrigerator and pumps that heat from and extracts it from the house to the outside in the summer. Cool. Yeah.
Cool. Wow. So, wow, you're blowing my mind with this, because boy, living in Oklahoma, let me tell you what, my air conditioning went out a couple of weeks ago and nothing sends me over the edge faster than being too hot. Oh my goodness. And I just have, every time it happens, anytime any kind of funkiness happens with my AC, which is almost every season, I don't know how I'm so blessed, but every time it makes me think of the people who settled here, you know, 200 years ago. And I'm like, man, those women in long skirts and long sleeves and trekking around in this 100 degree heat. I'm like, surely they had to be like running around in their skivvies. They couldn't have been in all that garb all day long. They'd have passed out. I'm like, but then I guess there is some, you know, I know from my own experience, when it's really blistery hot here, I'm cooler by having something lightweight that covers me than having all my skin out. So
that's true, because the movement of the cloth on your body actually cools you down. And buildings were designed differently back then. They weren't as airtight as your house is probably. So, and they carefully lined up windows and doors. I went to a plantation house just outside of New Orleans, and it was beautifully designed. It looked very symmetrical, but you realized when you're walking through it that it was all designed for passive cooling, like the with the windows lining up with the doors, and you could get the breeze going through the whole house. Like, how often do you see a house that's designed and you could get a breeze going through the whole thing if you opened up all the doors and windows? What was really interesting was that they had this roof attic area that was enclosed in shutters, and they would go up there and sleep, and they would be all enclosed in and safe, right? But the breezes would just blow right through it. There's nothing.
That's wild, because, you know, we're always taught heat rises. So that'd be the last place in Louisiana I'd think of to go and try to sleep. I'd probably want to be down on the front porch, and, you know, but well,
they didn't have a basement, and the front porch wasn't safe.
Right.
So that was the best option. And they probably closed a door so that the heat wasn't rising up into it. Right.
Right. Right.
But now that whole attic is full of big, huge air conditioning ducts.
Oh, no. Wow.
Yeah. They went in and, you know, took that 1800s plantation and just kind of chopped through it to put these big ducts in and stuff. They didn't have any of that back then. I loved their fridge, though. They had this terracotta pot that was set into the mud floor of the kitchen. And the terracotta pot went down about 2 or 3 feet into that mud. And it would stay at about 8 or 9 degrees Celsius in that pot with a cork lid to it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know out here they put things in the creeks to keep them cool.
That's a good idea. We used to do that camping. We would take our beer and we would string it up on a line that we'd fish on. And then we'd trail it along the canoe.
Oh, wow. That's wild. So how long have you been doing this kind of work?
I did architecture. I studied architecture in university. And when I first graduated, I was really lucky because I started working for a really advanced engineer that was helping design these passive buildings back then. And it was an off-grid school I was working on. And not only was it all powered with renewable energy, but they also had what was called a bioregenerative waste treatment system in the school to treat all of the sewage waste. And it went through a series of ecosystem tanks and ended up in this wetland, and the water in that wetland was cleaner than the lake water outside next to the building. Yeah, it was really amazing engineering. And Tom and Jerry's uses it in Vermont to treat all of their leftover food waste. They use it for cities in China, all kinds of things. Yeah.
Okay, without getting too political here, or I'm okay to go there if you are, but why do great ideas like this seem to exist in a vacuum or only in these little pockets of places? Why isn't this kind of stuff more widespread?
Yeah, and I think it comes to our perspective, right? So if you, we have certain blinders, certain ways of doing things, right? It's like a horse wearing blinders. Yeah. And if you have done something a certain way and it worked and it's a known cost and it's predictable and it's dependable, then it's hard to get out of that. It's like a rut, right?
Yeah.
And you don't have that perspective because you have the blinders on. You don't have that perspective of, you know, what are the possibilities of doing anything different, right?
And is this knowledge, like, this is fairly specialized knowledge, I would imagine, not common for every man. Although it could be, just like what we know to be so familiar now is, like, I'm not a home builder by any stretch, but I know how these systems in my house work. So I guess that's part of it as well. Huh.
It is part of it. I think we've lost a lot over the generations. I know we lost a lot in North America because the indigenous population was devastated by smallpox that came with the initial European visitors to North and South America and preceded, you know, the main colonial infiltration of North America. So, for example, they found fishing technology that's thousands of years old I think it was the East Coast, but the indigenous people in that area didn't even know about it because
that chain was lost.
Yeah, that whole part of the civilization was lost.
So we did lose a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we get all hopped up on our technology and great ideas and the chase of the new and
wow. Yeah, and there's very little monetary incentives for doing something new that might have societal environmental benefits because those have been seen as intangible and not, you can't calculate the benefits of it. You can't put it on the books. It doesn't show up in the profit and loss balance. Mm-hmm. And unless there is a mechanism for incentivizing companies and government to do things differently, then they ignore that aspect quite frequently. Well, that's what I find with my clients. It's very difficult to convince them to build a better building if it's going to cost them more. But when I start bringing in, and that's why I don't just do the energy efficiency, when I start bringing in the healthy building aspects of it, when I start building in like the resiliency of it, like a passive house, a certified passive house will not freeze. Like all your pipes won't freeze if all of the heating goes out on it for days and days.
Wow.
And it won't overheat for days and days without the power as well. So all of our buildings that we have been designing for the last 100 years are basically on life support. They're on mechanical systems to heat and cool them. And
they can condense the very things that could do it on their own, huh?
And the building itself could be used to heat and cool.
Wow.
So that's what I really like. It's bringing the power back to architecture. It's bringing the science back to architecture. And it's not just, oh, we're going to make a pretty building.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when you were talking about the plantation house and how opening all the windows, getting the breeze through, I think I got very lucky with my house. It faces south and I have four big windows on the front of the house, which the way the house is positioned and the way the sun sets in the summertime, my front yard And thanks to the elm tree in my neighbor's backyard, there's at least 10 to 15 degree difference in the temperature between my front yard and my backyard because of that tree. But in the spring and the fall, I don't have a lot of windows along the back in that part of the house. It's a 3-bedroom ranch, you know, so a little rectangle. But between those windows on the front and my front door, if I open those and I just open the windows over the sink in the kitchen on the opposite side of the house, I get like torrent wind through there, like blow up your skirt kind of wind, you know? And through the use of box fans, I can get the bedroom half of the house involved in that, because I do have like the window in the front on the street side, and then there's an opposite window here in this room, this one right here. So I can open that one, open the one in my bedroom, open this, both make sure both doors are open. And with a box fan properly positioned right there at the end of the hallway, I can get some of that happening, even though this part of the house is all cut up into rooms. It's not open like the other end of the house is. And my kids used to, back in another lifetime when I was with my daughter's father, his kids would come and visit on the weekends, and his daughter was wearing her parka all the time in my house.
Wow.
And I'm like, you know, you can put more clothes on, sweetheart, but I can only take so many off. So we're going to go with keeping me comfy. And if you're cold, put some more clothes on.
Yeah.
But I was able, every year I do this, see how long I can last without turning the air on. And I made it to June this year, which is really impressive in Oklahoma. And then in the fall, you know, in September, we usually start, we get like not a cold snap, but a preview of things to come, you know, like a little cool spell. And once that comes, I'm like, ooh, watch it. Air's going off, folks. We might be a little warm and heated a couple days, but I just love and out here back east, I grew up back east and I had allergies and hay fever and all that nonsense. I couldn't have the house open or I couldn't breathe, you know. But out here, I'm not allergic to any of the stuff they've got out here. So opening up the house and letting it fly is just, oh, it's lovely. It's lovely. That's so neat. Yeah, I imagine it's a true statement, though, that you enjoy this enough that you would do it even if you didn't get paid. Is that true or false? I mean, practical things of money aside.
I think I would. I recently got into writing books.
Uh-huh.
And I have to say I enjoy that more. And
really?
Yeah. And I also just did a course in passive design and became a certified passive house designer. Uh-huh. And I haven't done design work of architecture for a very long time. And I'm looking forward to getting back into that. I'm talking to a couple that wants to build a house just outside of Montreal. And I want to design houses. I was really inspired when I went in November of 2019 to Oak Park neighborhood of Chicago and saw Frank Lloyd Wright's houses that he had designed there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were not very successful. And I thought to myself, like, I don't have to be a perfect designer to design homes. Like, I can design very beautiful homes and they don't have to be perfect. And I always had this idea in my head that everything had to be perfect. And I think
I wonder where we got that from, huh?
Yeah. I think with my age, I'm letting that go. It's like, nothing is perfect, but you have to enjoy your life. And I really miss that aspect of design and everything from the outside in. I worked as an interior designer for a couple of decades. So I love furniture and millwork and, you know, kitchen design. And I designed hotel restaurants and I love looking at different kitchen appliances and how they work together and new technologies in cooking that take less energy, like induction cooking. And
uh-huh.
I love all of that, like everything from the outside in. So I'm really looking forward to doing that work for my clients. I think that that's super exciting to me. And then I do other work on retrofits of buildings. And I think it's just because I'm so passionate for my clients. And I do coaching on new construction as well, but they have to be the right clients. Like I've got nonprofits and charities that I work with on those. And it's like I tuck them under my wing and just make sure that it all gets done properly for them. And I love that aspect of it. So yeah, very I think curious. I would do it all if I wasn't, if I retired, like if I, like I can't imagine retiring, but if I was financially, you know, able to let go of the money aspect of it, I think I would still be doing what I do.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I too cannot imagine retiring. I'm like, what would I do with myself? I have so many ideas up here that have had to sit on the shelf for so long. I'll be that crazy old 90-year-old lady trying weird stuff, you know, just like, oh, what is she up to now? Oh, goodness.
Definitely.
So you said you have a 17-year-old son, and I have 3 kids of my own. So we're both moms. How are you different from who you were before you became a mom, now that to who you are now as a mom? How has that impacted?
I'd say less anxious.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I had this, you know, anxiety about becoming a parent and how I would raise a kid and how they would turn out and what they would be like when they're a teenager. And I love how I raised my kid, and I love my relationship with him. And I just feel like there's just so many things that I did right. I mean, again, not perfect by any means.
Right.
But I can look back at it and say, you know what? I feel really good about all of it. And
it's awesome.
It's nice to have that, you know, that chapter kind of like complete in a way. Like he moves to Ottawa, which is a 5-hour drive away, at the beginning of September to start university. And I'm becoming an empty nester, and who knows for how long, whether he'll be a boomerang kid and come back. But
all 3 of mine have been boomerangs so far.
Yeah, so who knows, right? But
yeah,
but for now he'll be living in student residence and pretty far away, right? So
yeah,
a new chapter.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting to look at them? And I don't know if you do this, but sometimes I look at them and I think, I try to imagine me not being their mother, but just who is this person on planet Earth that I'm looking at and listening to. And they're some fascinating creatures, these 3. And I really share that sentiment of, I look at them and I'm like, dang, you guys are cool. And I don't know that on the front end of that, I mean, for me, I've always known I wanted to be a mother. That was the only thing I know for sure. Everything else has been whatever caught my attention. And I have 5 billion interests. So me picking a favorite of anything is ridiculously hard. But with these 3, it's like, I knew I wanted to be a mom. I had some very specific ideas, like most of us do, about what that was going to entail or not, based on my own upbringing. And the rest of it, I just kind of winged it. And Lord, did I not do a perfect job. But I also think that, you know, I have been on I've had a major focus on personal growth and who I'm trying to become as a human for most of my life. And I think that probably was, for me, the saving grace, where I was not measuring up as a mother. That piece of me that was always striving to do better kind of filled in some of those gaps, you know. Now, in the moment, those were difficult moments and strife-filled, and there was a lot of drama back there. But now, Now they're all over 21. Now there's, especially with the oldest, he's 34 this year. And there's been enough time pass between all that high noon drama years of his late teens, early 20s, that now we just, he told me the other day, he said, you know, Mom, I really sit and think about it. And there's just no other thing you could have done but what you did. So don't feel bad about it. We kind of had each other in lockstep. You know, it's like, you didn't have a lot of choices based on what I was doing and vice versa. So, you know, we're good. We're through it. And, you know, he'll tell me often that I am one of his, he uses ride or die chicks. I'm his ride or die. And I'm like, you know what? I could deal with that. I really like having that level of knowing about this human that I brought here. I know him well, and it's awesome. And my daughter, I'm getting to know that well. And the one in the middle, he, not so much. I don't see him as much. I don't have as much time spent with him. And he's like his mama, much a introvert, keeps to himself, has a lot of alone time, needs a lot of alone time. So he's probably the one that I'm going to have to chase down and have, look, we need to have some conversations. I'll take you to breakfast. We can do it however we want to, but by golly, I need to get to know you, sir. And he'll be like, okay, Ma, come on. But they know who they've got with me. So, you know, he can run, but he can only hide for so long. I'll find him.
Yeah. Can't imagine if I had an extrovert kid. My son's an introvert and, you know, really needs his time to himself. But we have good talks. We go for walks around the neighborhood together. I really enjoy my time spent with him. Just lately we've been cooking together. So that's been fun. I'm trying to think of some special things that we can do together before he leaves. You know, this is an ongoing thing. I'm going to see him probably in mid-October for Canadian Thanksgiving. I don't have to fit everything in before he leaves. He's getting a lot of pressure from other people to see them and everything else. And I don't want to add more pressure to his life.
Yeah. It's going to be really fascinating to see who he is each time he comes home. And all the influences of school and the people he meet there and the things he's studying and how that impacts how he sees the world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I would be really excited in your shoes to have that ahead of me.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing him thrive, studying what he wants to study. I think it's going to be a lot of work.
Does he know what he wants to study?
He's going into aerospace engineering.
Oh, yeah. That's a little bit of studying.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He's got his work cut out for him, but that's okay. He's up to the challenge. He's very, very smart. And when he puts his mind to it, he really does focus and get things done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Out of my three, I would say the oldest and the youngest are extroverts, and the middle one, Tyler, is an introvert. Growing up, and they're all 6 years apart in age, so that impacted their growing up. Joe definitely got the least experienced, most mistake-making mother of the three of them, just by virtue of hadn't been doing it long. He's the first one, you know. And then when he was six, Tyler was born, and it was great when they were little like that, because Joe was like, hey, go get a bottle, Joe. Hey, will you go get the wipes out of the living room, Joe? And I don't have to be toting around this half-dressed baby, you know? And it was great. And he was so protective of his little brother.
I babysat for families that are like that. So my practice kids was babysitting and being a nanny. I started babysitting when I was 12. And had a lot of babysitting jobs. And then I was a part-time nanny in the summer of 91 before I graduated from university. And that convinced me that kids were a lot of work and I was going to take my time before having them, which was a good thing. Yeah. I had my son when I was 35. I turned 35 that year.
Gotcha. That's when I had my daughter, my youngest. I had Joe when I was 23, Tyler when I was 29, and Lexi when I was 25 or 35. And, you know, I think it's true what they say about the older moms. I was calmer. I was, but I also had two prior to her at that age too. So I think a lot of the everything has to be perfect. Keep all the germs away, all that. My daughter was eating dirt, you know, it's like,
I was pretty relaxed as a mom, I have to say.
Yeah,
I was also one of those ones that kind of kept an eye on research and signed my kid up for baby sign language courses, you know, and that kind of thing too. So it was a combination, but I think I was a pretty relaxed mom. And oh my God, it aged me though. Like I was pregnant with my kid and went for a checkup at the hospital and they were giving me a hard time. They were like, you know, people like you that are so young, they shouldn't be having kids so young. Like, what? I said, did you see my chart? I said, did you see my chart? I'm 35. She goes,
they were using words like geriatric pregnancy with me at 35. How'd you luck out? I'm like, look, I don't need a wheelchair. I'm just 35. Oh, but you're like gestational diabetic and you're geriatric this. I'm like, what? That was crazy. And then there they are telling you not to be having kids so young at 35. Uh-huh. Wild.
I know. I didn't have any kids.
45?
I didn't have any kids, so I didn't age, right?
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Because I was on the precipice. I did have a teenager. No. Joe turned 13 right after Lexi was born. So
yeah,
there I was. When I lost my job and started my business back in 2002, I had a 15-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 3-year-old. So I had one in high school, one in elementary school, and one in diapers. That was fun. And that's actually probably the reason I started a business. I'd always wanted to work for myself, and I always had some kind of business on the side when I was working. But that whole 15, 9, and 3 from one person, I was a single mom. There is not enough of me to go to two different schools and a daycare based on what happens in their day. I didn't have time to go to an office all day long. I'm like, I got to figure out how to make money right here while I can look at all of them. And I spent some years early on substitute teaching for the express purpose of A, keeping my oldest one in school. And so I'd go get paid to spy on him. That was fun. He was not a fan. Yeah, he was not a fan, but
no.
But then my younger son, I subbed a lot of his classes, and that was more preventative of, okay, well, we didn't quite keep Joe in school and he's a whole other personality anyway. So let's take what I learned there and apply it here. And I remember one day I told Tyler, I said, look, dude, you are graduating high school. I don't care what it takes out of the two of us to make that happen. The high school dropout slot in our family is taken. If you're not on board with this, I don't know what to tell you. Take it up with God, because I can't help you. You're graduating. And
the law had been laid down.
Yes, yes. Defy me if you want to. And oh, did he try? I mean, actually, that's not even fair to say. Tyler is not a defiant kid. He wasn't even as a teenager. What got him in trouble was his big heart. He had a girlfriend who had a really messed up family, and she ran away from home and tried to come here. And I'm like, no, I'm not getting in the middle of that. And she ended up in the foster system, and she'd constantly run away from there. And he'd sneak her in his bedroom window because, "Mom, I can't have her out in the yard in 15 degree weather. She'll freeze." And I'm like, how about she stays where she belongs? She won't freeze there. You know, she doesn't need to be in our backyard. So, you know, that kid, I laid down the law like that. I sure did. And it must have made an impression because second semester of his sophomore year in high school, he got our schools had a policy of attendance. If you miss so many days, I don't care what your grades are, you're not passing, you funk because you weren't here. And behind that rule, excuse me, he got 0 credit for his second semester of sophomore year and 0 credit for all of his junior year. And that was the 18 months this was going on in our world. And finally, we got some resolution with her. She finally decided this wasn't, this pop-up thing she was doing was not working out for her. And they ended up breaking up, not a big surprise. And I remember sitting out on the back deck with him discussing, how is he going to get all these credits made up and graduate on time? I didn't see a way for that to happen. He looked at me and he said, with the same vehemence I told him that he'd have to take it up with God, he's graduating, with the same voice and attitude back at me, he's like, "Oh, don't you worry, Mom. I'm graduating on time. I'm gonna make it happen." And I'll be darned if he didn't. And I told him on graduation day, I'm like, "Oh, you done messed up, sir." He's like, "What do you mean?" I said, "You showed me what you're capable of here. Holy cow. That's amazing to have made up." He did essentially 2.5 years in 1 year, and obviously had a lot of help and cooperation from his teachers and stuff, but they really made him do the work. And I was like, wow, it was something else to watch. So my poor daughter, by the time she gets to high school, she's like, "Fine, I'm just here. I'm going to graduate, mother." And she did. There was no fight out of her because she's like, "Okay, those two tried all both ends of the, never mind. I'm just going to do what she says." I'll fight my battles on another front with her. And she has. But yeah, that was something. It was also kind of a, you know, I've always joked about kids or people with one child. You miss so much of the drama of raising kids with only one because you don't ever have to hear, "Mom, he's looking at me. Mom, he's touching my stuff." You know, that kind of thing.
I don't know, actually, more.
That really disqualifies you, though, because you deal with a different set of things that people with multiples don't have to deal with. You know,
yeah. Like all that effort just for one kid.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like you're a mom. You're tied down. You have that as a priority, and it's just one kid, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you raise them, and they leave, and it's like, okay, pretty empty house, right? I would have had more kids, but I had a back injury when I was pregnant, and I blew a disc in my back, and I was in a wheelchair for 6 weeks, and had to learn how to walk again after that pregnancy.
Oh, Sandra. Wow.
I had a walker for 4 months and finally was walking on my own about 4 months after I had Jasper.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Had a lot of help.
I didn't have much help. I had a little bit, but it was hard. My ex figured out that I could put the car seat on top of the walker, and then I could walk the baby around the apartment.
Oh, instead of carrying him.
Hmm?
Yeah. Instead of carrying him, you mean?
Like, exactly. Because I couldn't carry him. I couldn't take him out on my own until he was 4 months old. That was the hardest part because I couldn't walk around the park. I couldn't do anything at all.
Gosh.
So
if you couldn't even get him out of the car seat on your own.
No,
you couldn't get him ready for bed. You couldn't those things.
I figured out ways to get him his diaper changed and everything else. And obviously I was breastfeeding and, you know, trying to recuperate at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had had a C-section too. They made me go through the full pregnancy because they couldn't do any scans to find out how badly my disc was blown. My doctor came to me after the C-section. It was an emergency C-section after like 15 hours of labor. Imagine going through 15 hours of labor with a blown disc in your back, and then emergency C-section. And then the next day I was taken for an MRI, and my doctor came to me and he said, "I am so sorry. I did not realize that you had a major back, and I don't know how you withstood it." Because wow. I couldn't have any painkillers for it. They ended up giving me corticosteroid epidural injections for mm-hmm. the inflammation. But that had, you know, that has long-term effects too, right? Like it right. affects your hormones.
Yeah.
So yeah. My physiotherapist said, I just barely got you walking after this one. Don't have another kid. I'm like, okay. Yeah.
Well, after having been through that, I'm sure you probably weren't in a hurry to sign up for that again.
No, no, not really. I would have had a second one if
didn't have that
one had gone well.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'd have a brother or sister for sure. Yeah. I think two would have been the right number. But then again, I separated from my husband. It'll be 10 years ago this month, and we ended up divorcing a few years ago. And I did, you know, I think most of the parenting
mm-hmm.
for the two of us. And yeah, it would have been way too much for two if I had had two kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it all works out for a reason. That's what
it does.
Believe in. And my son's very happy to be an only child. It's going to be so weird because he's going to live in student housing and have a roommate.
Oh,
he's never negotiated with anybody right long term.
Oh, he's in for some fun, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, better the college roommate than the first partner, you know, bear the brunt of all that learning. Because that'd be way too hard to discern. Is this you or is this just you prickly because you have to share?
Exactly. He's had to share with his cousin on holiday for a week or two, but that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. And they're like brothers. They're within a year apart of each other. He said, "It's great. We're like brothers, but we get to grow up separate on their own stuff."
Yeah. Oh, when I get tired of you, I can send you home.
Yep, exactly.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So what is something you just couldn't live without?
Well, I think I found out during COVID that I just can't live without nature. Access to nature.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that I truly didn't appreciate as much before the lockdown.
They didn't have it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably true for a lot of us, actually. Out here in Oklahoma, I don't get the sense that we've had the same lockdown experience that more populated areas have had. Like my friends and clients back east, they just talk about all this a whole different way. Like out here, yeah, we've got COVID and we had a mask mandate. We don't now, amazingly enough, and the Delta variant seems to be ripping through the state at great speeds. And that's, you know, that's a whole other ball of wax there. But we are so much more spread out here that I literally, like, it wasn't until probably August or September of last year that I really realized, oh, wait a minute, like a whole season has passed me by and I haven't been outside.
Oh, wow.
You know, like, but that's what, cause this whole work from home, stay at home, that's been my normal for the last almost 19 years now. When I'm here at home, especially now that the kids are up and out, I can go a whole week and my car never leaves the driveway, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm similar, Suzanne. I've been working from home now for 11 and a half years.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a big change in terms of In terms
of being isolated.
And I felt less isolated because my son was doing high school from the living room. When that first started happening, like I wasn't used to having him around all the time. And making lunch for him. And like, I didn't have to pack a lunch for him anymore, but we would have lunch together. And that was a big adjustment to get used to because I was used to, you know, he'd leave at 7:35 in the morning and he'd be back at 5 o'clock at night. So I would have my day to myself and would eat whenever I wanted to. There was nobody saying, hey, I'm hungry. What's for lunch? Or I would, you know, and then I started shopping online for groceries as well. So
I had already been doing that too.
Yeah, we kind of got a routine going with that. Like there is this food delivery place that orders that brings in fresh produce. So I would always like throw in a chocolate croissant every Monday for him. And that would be his incentive to unpack it and wash everything. Like he could have the chocolate croissant if he did all that. So we got into a routine together and that was good, but it was a big adjustment for me at first just to have him around all the time. But it was nice. I really enjoyed having him around. It was a really nice surprise to spend all that time with him.
Yeah.
And then I realized that I wasn't getting out at all because I used to go downtown for networking events and meet up with clients and things like that, meet up with friends. All of that stuff was happening online and I wasn't getting out at all. Like there'd be weeks go by and I hadn't gotten out of the building. And every time I went out, people would be not wearing masks in the corridor and like freaking me out. Because I live in a really large 18-story apartment building with about 400 people. So it's the same number of people in this apartment building that were in the town where my parents grew up.
Yeah.
And then there's another one like it there. There's another one there, another one behind that one, and another one here. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 minus the 6 in this neighborhood. Of high rises, and like we're right next to a ravine. There's a lot of ravines in Toronto. The whole city was built on a delta of ravines, and luckily there's a pathway right into the ravine next to our building. So I found if I could just kind of like change my mind about people wearing masks and stuff in the corridors and stuff, and if I could just like get down to the bottom of the building and get out, then the ravine was my respite. So back to what I couldn't live without. I couldn't see myself surviving. You know, Toronto was the most locked down city in North America during COVID. Yeah, we're very multicultural. If there's any variant coming in from anywhere, then it's going to hit Toronto. As you know, SARS hit Toronto in 2003. So yeah, we have been the most locked down city of North America, for sure.
Tulsa definitely has not been.
Oh, I know. I know what it's like in Oklahoma, and it's totally different. I talked to my friend Matt there, and he's like, what do you mean you're locked down again? Like, yeah, we can't go anywhere. Restaurants aren't open. Like, we just reopened restaurants at the beginning of June, just the patios.
Wow.
Yeah.
We've had bars and restaurants open since May 15th, 2020 here.
Oh, wow. We were locked down from March to July of last year, of 2020. And then patios opened for the summer. Restaurants never opened for 2020. And then in October, everything locked down again. It was all curbside pickup, no restaurant patios even. You couldn't sit on a bench in the park with someone who wasn't in your household. You couldn't sit in the park at all for a while. And then it was full lockdown from October to June. And then they opened up restaurant patios. And then they opened up restaurants in July, like indoors. And
with COVID seating, like every other table empty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our problem down here is we don't have enough people. Like, restaurants are not able to open, not because of any mandate or anything, but because they can't hire enough staff to open. We've had so many restaurants, like they'll go down to like 3 or 4 days a week just because they don't have the staff to rotate shifts.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, here in Oklahoma, the unemployment, the additional amount of unemployment that people were getting during COVID just blew away so many people. It was so much more than what they were making at their jobs. There's like, never mind, I'll sit tight and look for a job that pays me more than this because I'm not going backward. And I'm like, wow, really brought to the fore the disparity in income here. Something.
Yeah.
So
the inequity is hard.
It is. And it's getting bigger. The gap is getting wider. And yeah. So let's brighten this up for a second. What do you do for fun? Just pure unmitigated fun. What's your go-to?
I got into doing karaoke on an app.
Yeah, on Shmuel? Which
yeah,
one?
On Shmuel, yeah.
I'm going to find you. We will sing a song together.
Awesome. That would be great. I would love that. I usually did that on Friday nights during lockdowns. Mm-hmm. I would just, you know, get on there and sing my heart out. And I'm learning the ukulele. I really love Billie Eilish, and she did a virtual concert last October, and uh-huh. I bought her Billie Eilish signature limited edition Fender ukulele.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Wow. We have karaoke in common. How about that? I am a frustrated singer, and in this life I chose a very different path, but karaoke has come into my life probably about 3 or 4 years ago, and man, it's probably the one thing that keeps me from going just completely crazy. I, you know, in high school I sang all day long in school, and my days were very musical, and when I graduated high school all that went
I used to be in choir, musicals.
Yeah.
Musicals my whole life. Yeah. I loved it.
And there's been a 35-year void of that while I was, well, not void of music, but void of me creating music.
I know the feeling. I had a piano. I grew up learning piano, and I didn't learn pop piano. I learned classical.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been wanting to get a piano. So that's on my list to get still. There's this really beautiful, small, compact electric piano that I want to get that still has the full 8 octaves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's gorgeous. So that's been on my list to get.
I just had to finally resign myself to the fact that I had a piano here for years. Lexi's dad, he works for a moving company. So often he would bring home things that customers didn't want to move. And they'd say, hey, you want this instead? You can have it. Well, he got a piano for Lexi because she was harping on him about wanting to learn piano. Lexi does not want to learn piano. Okay. Lexi likes the idea of learning piano. So we had probably a good 10 years with a piano in this house. And for me, it was like every time I walked by it, every time I saw it, I just wanted to go sit and spend my day there playing. And I knew I couldn't. So I'm like, blinders, don't look, don't look. And finally, I'm just like, quit torturing yourself with this piano. Give it to somebody who will take the time to sit down and play it. So I gave it to my granddaughter. And I don't know that she has any more time than I did to actually play it. But man, that's how I got through being a teenager. I played piano all day long and sang. I probably wore out the eardrums of everybody in my household, but I didn't care. Music was my life. And so make sure you have the time to spend with it before you get it, lest you torture yourself.
That's true. And I think that's why I haven't gotten it, because I still have, you know, 2 books that I haven't finished writing. And I think that it's going to be my present to myself when I finish writing my books.
Oh, that's awesome.
I just made that up.
I think
I give you credit for that.
Okay, great. I'll take it. That's awesome. So, okay. What is the best thing about being you?
I'm quirky. Like I'm really just not normal, and I really like that. Like I think the biggest compliment people can give me when they start getting to know me is, you're weird.
Yeah. I like it when I hear it with that little bit of recognition of, ooh, two, like the two is implied. You know, yeah. I love that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Used to be just you're weird. Now it's like, oh, you like that too?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on the flip side, what's the worst thing about being you?
I'm 5 feet tall.
You can do all things, but you can't reach the top shelf.
I can barely reach the top shelf just because I stretch a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would rather, I mean, it comes in handy every once in a while when I take a flight and I'm on the window seat and I can stand up straight.
Yeah.
And bulkhead when everybody else is waiting to leave and they can't stand up. I'm like perfectly able to, unless it's one of those tiny cigar planes. I rode one of them.
Right.
I'm like, I don't like this. I can't even stand up. So I would rather be taller.
Okay.
I would rather be 4 inches taller if something came out, like some sort of technology came out when I'm, you know, later in life and it said, oh, you can be 4 inches taller. Yeah, I would take that pill.
Okay. Well, at 5 feet four, I don't know that it's worth the pill, the difference, but I haven't been 5 feet in a very long time either. But I understand the short factor. It's like, there are some advantages though. Like, there are. Because like you, I can almost stand up on an airplane like that, like you're talking about.
And my feet always look cute. Like they're tiny feet, right? So yeah. They always look cute. And then I always feel like I'm kind of more at home in Japantown.
Oh. In Toronto, because
everybody's shorter.
Yeah.
But I don't have the body type to fit into all the clothes.
Right.
I have a regular person's body, just on a shorter
compacted
plane. Yeah. Yeah, just compacted. I'm under tall.
yeah, under tall.
But then again, I don't know that I would like the person that I would be at that height, you know? Like
why not? What do you think it would do to you?
It wouldn't be me, right? So I like myself the way I turned out. And if I had turned out, you know, to be 5'4" or 5'8", like what kind of personality would I have? Who would I be? What kind of, would I be arrogant instead of just confident? Would I be, I don't know. What would my life be like? I've never thought of it that way, but I kind of like who I am. So I'd rather just be me. And to be honest, if that's all I have to complain about, then I'm pretty damn lucky.
Amen. Amen. And you lead me nicely into my last question for you, Sandra. What's the thing you're most proud of so far in your life?
There is a little inn on an island, off an island in Newfoundland that I helped the design team with. And I'm writing a book about it. Just because they made decisions without the blinders on, like going back to our previous conversation, they looked at the social impact. They looked at the environmental impact. They used that in to change the socioeconomic framework on the whole island. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place run by beautiful people. And they really care about their guests. It's called Fogo Island Inn.
Uh-huh.
And that is definitely what I'm most proud of working on. For sure.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's a really, really beautiful gem of a place in a gem of an island. Yeah. I just love that place. There's so many little tiny places on that island. I took my son there a few years ago to see the inn in operation.
Uh-huh.
And we stayed down the street from it. It's 5-star. So it's over $1,000 a night.
Yeah.
So we stayed at an Airbnb because And everybody says to me, well, why didn't you just let them know that you were coming and ask them to stay? And I'm like, well, every dollar that is revenue goes to the community. So I didn't want them to miss out on revenue.
Right. Right.
I did want to see it in operation though. And I wanted my son to see it. That was really important to me. And now I'm writing a book about it. It's going to be just like a little tiny little gem of a book. And
awesome. I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, it's about the values that they used in designing it and the mm-hmm. key word around it. And it's a working title right now is oughtness. And that's a word that we don't use anymore.
What word?
Oughtness. So,
spell it.
O-U-G-H-T-N-E-S-S.
You are so correct. I believe today is the first time I've heard that word come out of a human mouth.
Yeah.
Oughtness. Yeah. Okay.
So it's the aspect of what should be done.
Yes.
It's the responsibility. Yes. It's an aspect of caretakership.
Being a good steward of things.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And it really brings in that Indigenous principle of making decisions for seven generations in consideration mm-hmm. of seven generations. So I really wanted to highlight that. To the guests that are staying there and to the general public that you can make decisions on and tap into what ought to be done instead of just, oh, I should do this. I should do that. No, what ought to be done on that for the best mm-hmm. results for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the project that hasn't been recognized fully. They've won over 70 awards. Mm-hmm. Various tourism awards and design awards and things like that, but I really wanted to recognize them for their very valued decision making on the project. Yeah, we create our life and our world through language. So I'm very fascinated with ontology and ontological thinking, and mm-hmm. I like exploring different languages mm-hmm. because I think differently in different languages, and I understand the people that speak those languages. When I start learning about how they're structured and how they're formed and the roots of those words that mm-hmm. that form those languages, and I really yeah. respect people in Toronto. There's just so many people that speak English as a second language, and it's
yeah.
It's got to be so challenging to live that way. And I really respect the fact that they do.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out this morning to talk with me, Sandra. This has been really fun. I learned a lot about you. I love the things like when I'm learning how much I have in common with other people that I would never have had any other way to find out. So that's cool. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate your time. I can't wait to read your books.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
And most welcome.
Yeah, I look forward to the launch in September. It's going to be awesome.
Yes. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you. Bye.
If you're hell-bent on wringing every last drop of awesome out of this life and the time you have here, I invite you to visit SuzanneSaysPodcast.com for more conversations and to subscribe. If you'd like to be a guest and have a conversation, email me at letstalk@SuzanneSaysPodcast.com. Thanks for listening.